What is up, guys? Welcome to episode 4 of Deciphering Dynasty. Me and Leo Pasiga, we're talking a little dynasty, little questions for you guys at the end of the segment. We appreciate all the support we've gotten so far. And you know what? Why the heck? Why don't we just get into it? So we have some overview questions. So we've kind of been diving deep in the weeds the last few episodes, and we kind of want to scale the weeds back. I mean, granted, we are going to talk about some stuff that's probably a little weedy, but we're going to be getting into just kind of some general topics. Of like, hey, let's talk about startups. So, okay, let's talk about rookie draft. And then we've had some specific questions from listeners out there that we want to dive into. And that'd be a great time if you have dynasty questions, or maybe you have some dynasty questions right now you want to drop in the chat. We'll get to it at the end. But let's talk about punting a startup or the productive struggle build. So the idea is you're going to struggle that first year, but really, really build for that next year as you kind of go. It's probably one of the most popular startup techniques the last couple years. So let's just get into how we do it, but let's just talk about generally, you know, what is your opinion of it, Leo? Have you done this before, or just the idea of that productive struggle build?
So I love that strategy. That was my favorite way to build in a startup. And it was something I tried to execute regularly 7, 8, 5 years ago. Yeah. There was definitely an opportunity for that. It was a very viable strategy. It worked really well. But as that strategy has become more and more popular, it's just become harder to execute simply because when you get into that draft, there could be half of your entire league is building or wanting to build with that strategy. And the more people that are trying to execute that, the more difficult it becomes to actually make it a, you know, practical application to your build.
Yeah, it's one of those weird like things where, you know, it's like the in vogue running back, like zero running back is like we talked about one of those first episodes. Everybody's doing it now. So it's like, okay, now that everybody's doing it, you know, how do you adapt? You know, how do you look at that? I do think that there is, you know, some ideas about it. Ryan McDowell has really talked about productive struggle. Yep. That's really where it came from. And essentially, you know, you have to acquire like high upside players and in draft capital and be there. The biggest thing I will say this is that, and I saw this recently, and that's why I wanted to bring it up too. We're already going off on a tangent, but I don't care. It's our show. We can do whatever we want. I saw that, you know, someone said, everybody wants to trade back. Nobody wants to trade up. And so moves are really stagnant. The one area I've seen moves in, so I'm in a C2C startup right now. You'll see moves there because there's NCAA picks. So it makes it a little easier where you can trade. But in Dynasty, we don't have a lot of guys trading up. So in productive struggle, what I try to do is I try to accumulate draft picks from the 25, 26 class and build up that war chest. That's harder to do now because a lot of guys will not move a first just to move up into the first. The one position I say you can still do that with is quarterback. So you are still able in super flex drafts. There are guys that really want to kind of move up and get that second quarterback and be content there. And that tier probably stops like at probably Kyler Murray right now. Drake May in that range in the middle second, you might be able to get someone to bite, but it is extremely hard to trade back now. And it doesn't happen much like in a startup that we started this year for a charity league, and it's still a money league / charity. We only saw 4 trades within the first 6 rounds. And that's kind of unheard of in Dynasty. And these are real Dynasty players. These are guys that trade all the time. But it's just really hard now to trade back and collect those war chest assets.
It is. I think the other thing that's difficult right now is that a lot of your normal ADP first round picks in a Dynasty startup don't give you the indication of what the build is going to be. Yeah. Because you're talking about, you know, Jamar Chase and Jefferson, and you're talking about Amon-Ra St. Brown. A lot of those guys, running backs, Breece Hall, Bijan, Jahmyr Gibbs, they're all in that range where it doesn't really give you a definitive look into what the strategy is going to be. So you don't get to identify it in the first or second round and say, okay, there's 6 guys or 6 folks that are looking to execute this strategy. So I'm either going to pivot or I'm going to address it a different way. You kind of are stuck for the first, you know, 2 rounds, 3 rounds, not really having a clear look at what is each build going to be, unless somebody jumps and goes, you know, the 2 quarterback route right out of the gate. That gives you an indication what they're trying to do. But Otherwise, from an age perspective, the top targets are in that range that you would mm-hmm. be selecting anyway for this build. So again, it doesn't give you a clear light. I think what I would do, and I gave this a lot of thought as we talked, plan to do this show. If I was in a startup right now, I think where the advantage, when we talk about taking advantage of variances and whatnot, I think where the advantage is, it really falls in that range, especially for wide receivers, when you're talking about age 25 to 28, because mm-hmm. that still is a young yeah. enough age range where you're still going to have a long runway or a long enough runway to utilize them, or you can pivot because there's still going to be some trade value in an Ayuk or an AJ Brown, some of those guys that fall in that range. So I think that's where I would be looking instead of the prime age range where you're talking, 21 to 23 for a running back, 22 to 25 for a wide receiver. I would probably be looking in the next bracket to try mm-hmm. to capitalize, because it gives me flexibility. I'm not pigeonholed into just one particular type of build.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought up the range, because I was looking at it right now. So there's a range from round 4 to 6 that I think that there's a good area in there. So guys like this, Devonta Smith on like probably the fringe early part of that, where it's kind of close. Ayuk is in there. Waddle is in there. Waddle's really yep. dropping to the 4th and 5th round. And to me, in a productive struggle, Waddle to me is a perfect candidate because, he could give you some production this year. But if you're looking at it from like maybe next year, Hill moves on. Maybe Tyreek Hill kind of finally the following year, you can still get some production this year. But not enough to really take you over the top where you're concerned that you're not going to get the draft pick you want or however how that works out. Then Pittman is in there. Nico yep. Collins is in there. Flowers, Rice, DK Metcalf, JSN, yep. Higgins, Addison, even like, Jaden Reed is going to be on the outside of that. So like guys like that are that's probably the way you go. Like that's probably third, round 4 and 5 in that range, you're going to start figuring out, okay, this is going to be that productive struggle team. And you can also punt the quarterback position, but it's tough because now I will say the one guy that I wouldn't mind punting the quarterback position for, like if I am going to do that productive build, a guy like Bryce Young stands out. If you're a believer in Bryce, he's going like the 6th round. He's going 6th, 7th, 8th round in that range. And you're going to have that struggle to where next year you look for a quarterback. The issue is in the 25 class, there's no clear-cut guy like Caleb or Drake or these guys that we've had. So there is that like, okay, can I bank on that? But Bryce to me is a perfect candidate. Any of the rookie quarterbacks like JJ McCarthy, he's going 5th, 6th round. So if you believe in the Michigan quarterback, he might sit a year. Levis, if you believe in that, like those are guys that are very good productive struggle guys that you could kind of reach on later. The perfect guy last year was Kyler Murray, but we don't have a quarterback that's hurt right now. So like that's, I think last year's builds really saw a lot of Kyler Murray going. Deshaun Watson could be another one. Like guys like that, if you're going to pivot and look at that quarterback position, just go elite wide receiver. You get Jefferson, you get like those guys in the first where you're just going to build through that wide receiver position. Those are the guys maybe to target later.
And I think that's a really good point. Another thing that I think is important as you go through these startups is that there's different degrees of punting a draft, mm-hmm. just like there's different degrees of rebuilding a roster, right? We talked about the full-on burn it to the ground, start over from scratch. We talked about rebuilding on the fly, like a reloading, not a total rebuild from scratch. So I think there's the same type of lens that you can apply to a startup draft, because as you start to build your roster, you can still have an eye on the future, but you have to kind of make the decision. Am I really all out on year one, or am I semi-competitive? Am I still going best player available, even though yeah. I'm totally punting? So there's different degrees, and you have to kind of layer that lens as you build your roster and make a commitment to one or the other.
Don't be wishy-washy. Like that's the key. Like be committed, because I do think that some guys start off with this build and then, hey, I'm going to be a productive struggle. And then they find themselves like there's so much good value in those middle rounds or like late rounds that you're like, hey, I can take Davante Adams in the 8th or 9th. I can kind of pivot, but then you kind of cap your team too, because yep. you're really kind of in the middle. So, really hold true to what you're trying to build. I think is the biggest thing as you go through there. And know your goal. Like you, we always talk about, we've been talking about that a lot. Like know your goal where it's at. Obviously you have to pivot sometimes. But there is benefit. Like the biggest benefit of doing this is, you know, out 2 to 3 years out, you're sitting there and you have a juggernaut. Really, I've seen people build up that emphasize youth, really go after that. Maximize as much draft capital as you can, get those seconds, really pivot, kind of get those guys. But as you build, you really can have just build and go and go from there. Anything overview that you want to kind of touch on before? I want to get into the running back talk, but I don't want to jump the gun. So is there anything else in terms of that productive struggle, like just to start it, risk and all those type of things?
I think you just also have to be aware of, as you're building your team and you're focused on your roster, understand what the landscape is going to look like once the draft is done. As each roster starts to build out, realize that if there are six teams in this league that are going with a productive struggle build, that anybody that you do draft that's 27 or 28, regardless of how productive they are, very likely is not going to be a tradable asset, you know, unless you have one or two teams that is going all in for the, you know what, I'll win now and I'll worry about what it looks like down the road. You just have to be cognizant of what the other builds look like, so that when you're debating between a few players, you kind of know, what does it look like if I want to try to move this player down the road? Do I have an opportunity for that?
That's a great, yeah, because if you're sitting there and you're sitting there with only six teams that have done this, six teams that are going to be contenders, you got to know that it limits your trade opportunity. And then you have to be, and if that does happen though, just for, you know, for context, we like to give context. If that happens where you're sitting there and like you have other, you got to set the market early. So don't be afraid of setting that market early and getting that trade off to those contenders earlier than you might have to, right? You have a Davante Adams and you're like, hey, second week, I'm going to go, okay, hey, Mike Evans, I'm going to try to get him off that roster. And just understanding that, I think, is important. The other thing I wanted to really, really harp in on, running backs. If you're doing productive struggle, I'm not drafting running backs. And I think a lot of people aren't drafting running backs. But if I was to draft running backs, and I'm going to touch base with what Leo thinks here, I put some down and I'm going to add a couple off the top of my head. But like, you know, Dobbins is a good example of maybe adding him later. The way I look at running backs in productive struggle, I want to grab guys late that I can move and that could accumulate value. So what I'm looking for is a Dobbins. Hey, maybe middle of the year he bounces back because he's going to be cheap. Bigsby, Tank Bigsby was an afterthought this last year. ETN's there. They didn't really like him. They didn't utilize him. But if someone goes down ahead of him, Bigsby might have some value. Keaton Mitchell, Dowdle, any backup running backs a lot, or maybe even Javonte Williams. Maybe that first couple weeks of the season, Javonte, who's going 9th, 10th round, you're like, hey, he's the old Javonte. I can kind of move him there. That's how I look at running backs. Is that how you kind of look at running backs in this strategy, or are you a little bit different?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. Where and the value is in what you can flip. And I think the value with a productive struggle build is being first and active on the waiver wire. Mm-hmm. You've got to balance, because you don't want to pick up running backs that are going to be extreme. If you're going for a full on productive struggle build where your eyes are on years 2 and 3, you don't want an asset on your roster that's going to be a startable commodity that, you know, you have to plug into your lineup on a weekly basis. If you don't have a trade market for that running back, you want to grab folks that you are going to be able to flip, because the goal is basically to focus on that next year or that third year. So you don't want, you know, that asset. Because even if you find a running back that's 23 years old that you think is putting up fantastic numbers and you're like, well, they can be part of my productive struggle, if you're legitimately 2 years away from being the juggernaut that you want to be, well, now that running back's 25, 26. So those age ranges matter, especially when you're dealing with running backs. And for me, it was always about I used to refer to them as the negative cuff, because it was always who was on the backside of the handcuff that was potentially in line for a bigger, a bigger payday. Mm-hmm. Wasn't necessarily a true handcuff, but it was more like a 70-30 split or a 60-40 split. Who was the player that was on the 30-40 side that I could get much cheaper. And then when that potential running back that was the, you know, the 70-60% running back, when they went down with an injury or, you know, couldn't start for a game or two, and you had that running back that was the negative cuff, that was the 40 or 30% guy, now all of a sudden you had a tradable asset that you could get in there and you could move, and you could start to acquire more assets for years two and three.
Yeah, and I think the spot where I'm looking at, just going over ADP, looking at running backs just in general, it's kind of in that 18 to 25 range. So like the late, late, late stuff. Like if you're going to sit here, the other guy that I said, I mean, I said Dowdle, you know, even a guy like, you know, I like Pierre Strong a little bit. I think I've liked him forever. But another guy, I just had him and I cannot find him on this big board and I don't know what is going on. This is a terrible way to podcast. But I just, Chris Rodriguez. So I don't know why I couldn't remember off the top of my head. Chris Rodriguez is a good example. Brian Robinson's ahead of him. Gibson might be moving on. Yeah, they might draft a guy, but Chris Rodriguez is going, you know, 20th round. That's a guy, like you said, 60-40 model or 70-30. I love Brian Robinson in this format too. But if I can get a guy like Chris Rodriguez, then you're really looking at that value there.
Yep.
And wide receivers too. Target elite players. Like, that's simple. Rookies to me are always still cheaper. A Neighbors is going pretty early, third round in some drafts, sometimes second round. But the thing with rookies is, like, a guy like Neighbors, like Puka Nacua is an outlier. Mm-hmm. Usually rookies take some time. Chase obviously didn't, but there's guys in Jefferson. There's guys that take time to really kind of step up and be that guy. So you could still grab these guys, and if they struggle, that's fine for you, as long as they show some sort of pulse out there. And then you're still putting yourself in position where he could be your wide receiver one. Like Neighbors could be your wide receiver one. Guys like Addison, JSN, Higgins, Rice, and Flowers are all good targets too, because you're looking at, can they ascend there? JSN to me is still a target. I know some people are really off of JSN, but I do think that that's a fun kind of just target for both ways. He could kind of have that next step. He's not going to hurt your team too much to where you're going to win a ton. But that's kind of how I look at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny, as I was looking over some of the players when, you know, I knew this was going to be a topic for the show. I started looking at the Atlanta Falcons, and I was, you know, three targets on that between Kyle Pitts as a tight end, Drake London as a wide receiver, and Bijan as a running back.
Yeah.
I mean, three guys that would be perfect for a productive struggle build, especially if they land a quarterback.
Yeah. And you know, it's Drake London's interesting because, so I was looking at his ADP. I mean, 309 in that range, I've seen him go, but I've also seen him go in like the fifth round. I've seen him drop a lot. So like, that's 100%. The value could be there, where Drake London could be your wide receiver one on a productive struggle team. And then maybe you add like Neighbors or also earlier and those type of guys. I mean, you're talking about building a juggernaut wide receiver room, and then you can use your capital. If you can able to move back and get some capital for running backs, even seconds, because you can buy some of these veteran running backs for seconds and you plug them in the next year or year three or whatever it was. And you could really extract some value there.
Well, one other strategy that I like to employ, and this would be a perfect year for it because of the depth at wide receiver, is that especially if you know during the startup you're battling, you know, the half of your league is trying to execute some form of a productive struggle build, which isn't uncommon really. I mean, yeah. You run into that where, you know, five or six of 12 are trying to do this, and you go overboard and go early on rookie wide receivers, even though a lot of them are going fairly high in startups. But if you just double down on that and go high, and then they start to get a lot of hype during the summer as training camp opens and they're starting to really get a lot of positive press on them. Well, that's another opportunity. Yes, you went with a productive struggle build, but so did five or six other teams in your league. And maybe that rookie that's now the sensation of training camp becomes some player, some asset that you're now able to flip before the season even starts for two young wide receivers that have a year in the league already, or 2 years in a league already, that the two equals one and you're more confident with that. So I just think that when you double down on those rookies, when that hype comes out, that just gives, you can keep them, but that gives you another chip to be able to maneuver a note when you have a lot of other teams in the startup that are trying to execute the same build.
Yeah. And the last point I will do this, then we'll go on a rookie. We're going to talk about some rookie draft prep stuff. Be very active with injuries that happen. So as you see dudes get injured every year, every offseason, all that kind of stuff, man, be active. Some guy tears his ACL, that's your guy. You go get him. You go get him for discount price, and you go target him based on one of the veterans you have. If, you know, that running back that gets hurt, go grab him. Like, you can kind of – like, Chubb would have been a great example. Absolutely free this last year. Mm-hmm. As long as you get some type of value back for him, that's a win in my book in terms of what you're probably giving up. So – be very active with, especially at the quarterback position. Joe Burrow is an example of that. You know, Joe Burrow gets hurt and you sit there and you have a quarterback that you can move, like Brock Purdy, or some guy that's contending and he really wants to go for it. Like Burrow getting injured, you know, Kyler the last year, like those type of guys are always got to be targets of yours. If you're doing productive struggle in that first year, because you got to look at your startup draft and your first year is the same thing. You're just building and collecting assets. Like your startup draft and your first year, you are productive struggle no matter what. So really what you should do is coming out of that first year, out of the productive struggle and the startup draft, then you're now it's your league. Now that second year is like your drafted team. That's kind of the like the idea and the concept behind it.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, let's get into rookie draft prep. So rookies are all ablaze. Everybody's talking about their guy. It's nauseating out here. I'm only gonna lie. I've been very calm about it. And it is like everybody's planting their flag, baby, on rookie draft prep already before we even had the combine. As the time it's going on right now. And maybe I'm the reason, you know, in terms of like we do a giant draft guide every year for football guys for free for the first time, and then we start seeing our takes getting out there, and we love it. It's fun. There's a lot of nuance though to rookie draft prep and rookies and all of those type of things that I think that people miss because everybody wants to be first. Because for some reason that means that they're the greatest analyst ever and whatever, if that's your thing, I appreciate you. But I think that, you know, when we're talking about how to get ready for it, how do you prepare for it? What are some things you do? So when you're getting obviously when you collect your draft picks, you know, we have the targets, we already mentioned that, you know, we talked about like where we're comfortable in. But you know, when you're getting into your rookie draft, because right now is when leagues are starting to ramp up a little bit. February, March is where you're going to see some movement. So how do you prepare for your rookie drafts?
So the first thing that I do is I like to have a base set coming out of February on where I view rookies, my own set of evaluations kind of in a vacuum, without knowing where they're going to land, without having combine results, mm-hmm. but just having a rough idea. And then I do like to look at some of the trusted voices that that are online that have publications, just to kind of compare, see where I fall, see if there's anybody I need to check again, because I'm way off with somebody who, you know, I respect and usually does a really good job breaking down film. Mm-hmm. Then the focus goes from having done a base evaluation and having a rough idea on where players fall to what does the league look like? What does the draft selection order look like within that league? And then match it up with tier breaks in that rookie class, right? Everybody does kind of rookie mocks this time of year. You already have an idea roughly based on your evals where you think the talent break is. Is it a break between 3 and 4? Is, you know, does the second tier break between 7 and 8? What does that look like? And line that up with your draft slots. Where are you picking? And what does that look like? And I never worry about roster construction. You know, oh my gosh, I need a running back. Oh my gosh, yeah. I need a wide receiver. Totally irrelevant. This, I mean, we still have the entire summer to go. Do not worry about the perfect roster, the perfect starting lineup. It's a complete waste of energy. Focus on best player available, the person that you have slotted, what you want. And then if there's enough history built up in the league, the third thing I look at after deciding tiers and where I'm picking, I look at, do I need to move, right? Do I need to really get up because there's a tier break where I'm picking, or do I need to move because the person that's right in front of me drafts generally the same way I do, and there is a tier break right in front of me, and I want to get there and get in front of that particular manager because of how they draft. So those are the three factors. Have a baseline for talent and what the rookie class looks like. Have it broken into tiers, and then have it league specific. What does it look like with who's drafting around me, and what does it look like with my pick in relation to tiers?
It's so important, and I'm going to just, you know, shout it from the rooftops. We do tier content. So I am part of the problem. We do tier content. We talk about tiers and where they're at. but it does not matter unless it's your league tiers, because your league tiers are going to dictate all of that. Like, I've been in drafts where, you know, I get questions all the time. Hey, you know, at the 103, I know the tier is going to be this, he's going to be here. And I say, well, what does the guy at 102 need? And it's always a blank, like, oh, I don't know, I haven't really thought about that. And I said, you know, and that's a very novice dynasty players. And as you get into it, you realize, like, hey, yeah, your tier break is based on that. But your tier break is also, if I'm in a league with Leo and he loves quarterbacks and he's sitting at 102, he's probably taking a quarterback. Like, even if Marvin Harrison Jr. is there, possibly, like, and or just knowing that, I might have to move ahead of him, or I might have to get to his spot and see if he'll maybe flip or do something with that asset. Even though, just like in a real draft, like, even though you know he probably won't take it, if you really want your guy, you're really taking a risk if he doesn't, right? So there is a tier break. Like, for example, everybody thinks it's Caleb, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the tier. And that probably is the tier. That's probably where you're at. Knowing what manager wants those guys, though, is definitely going to be important. And then after that, though, like, we can give you tiers all you want. We could say Odunze is in tier two, or we could say Brock Bowers is a tier one guy. It doesn't necessarily matter unless you know what your league mates have. And in knowing that, is you're able to kind of pivot. That's why I also say with tiers, there's a pre-combine tier, like before this week, before this, like people kind of have that tier. There's a post-combine tier. Once they run in shorts and they're out there in their 40-yard dash and doing that, we're going to see them kind of move up and down. And then obviously there's that post-draft tier. I would argue that probably the most important is to nail down is that pre-combine and try to get as close as you can to where you think the value is, because you can, the cheapest they're going to be to move within those tiers is pre-combine. Post-combine, it starts getting solidified a little bit. Like, you start seeing, like, yeah, this is where this guy's at based on testing. So it gets more expensive. So every tier gets more expensive. Pre is probably the cheapest. Post, more expensive. And then post-draft, more expensive. So you got to really understand, like, the longer you wait, the more expensive it's going to get.
Yeah, I agree. The other thing, so you're talking about league specific, right? So some guys or some folks, some managers like to draft quarterbacks. Sometimes it comes, we talked about this in the first show. Some people just have a comfort zone with certain positions. Yeah. That's what they like to draft. That's what they evaluate. That's what they're more secure in. They have better accuracy in that position. So they tend to invest in that position. Some folks draft best player available every time. Mm. Some folks draft based on a draft guide. They follow a particular site. Maybe they're Football Guy fans. Maybe they're Dynasty League Football. Maybe they're the Undroppables, whoever it may be. You know, JWB's group, whoever it is, they may follow that to the letter and pick off that. So knowing that, having that idea, whatever you can pick up in chat, you know, on social media, on message boards, in Discord, whatever it looks like, where you know your league mates, and if you don't have a ton of history to pull from, this is only maybe your second rookie draft because you've only been, you know, solvent for 2 years. So it's important that you get whatever you can from those discussions, even trade negotiations, whatever that looks like, the back and forth, the dialogue, whatever you can pick off as a inside detail to try to get an idea. Because I not only build my draft board for my draft slots, I build a draft board for the entire league. I play at plan out exactly how I think it's going to go and where do I need to move, where do I need to be active. And it's never 100% accurate, but it's close enough as a blueprint to give me an idea how aggressive I need to be pre-draft.
Yeah, and that's fun. Have you ever done more than, like, when you're talking about you build out your board, how deep you go? How many rounds? One round or two, three? How deep you go?
Usually three rounds.
Okay.
Because most of the dynasties that I was in, they were either three-round drafts. So there were two sets. At one time I was in about 30 leagues, right? And I would say 15 of the leagues drafted right after the NFL draft, within a week or 2 weeks of the NFL draft, and they went 5 to 8 rounds depending on the depth. And then we would have a cut down, right? You could pick 8 rounds, but when it came, you know, you had a 28 or 32 man roster that you had to cut down. So, but preseason you could go up and maybe as high as 40. So it gave you a chance to go deep in the draft, but then scale back as you got ready for the season. Yeah. The other set of leagues that I played in were only 3 round rookie drafts, and they were in July and August. So you beginning of August. So you already had a ton of training camp information. So, and that was done for the reason to try to provide a long enough runway to gauge the rookie. So you weren't drafting necessarily so much on what your own evals were from college. You're drafting from the news that you hear already in training camp. So there were benefits and negatives to both. But yeah, so my draft board, the three round ones that took place in the summer were much, much easier to navigate. The 5 to 8 rounds that took place right after the draft, I would generally go 3 to 4 rounds deep. And after that, you know, it comes back to what does your roster look like? If I was coming off a burn it to, you know, put in zero investment in year one and do a struggle build, then I was probably taking, you know, shots at some of the guys in those rounds, just, you know, hoping to have rookie value and depth on my roster. If I was already a competitive team, I was trading anything from round 5 to 8 because all it really was is a roster clogger.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to, I just think, you know, again, understanding how your rookie draft prep goes. I think the biggest thing that, you know, we've mentioned here too, that, yeah, know where they get their information from. Cause there was guys last year still drafting Kayshon Boutte in the second round based on who they were listening to. Because, you know, everybody thought at this combine, myself included, that he could really pop off. And if he did that, then he's going to solidify himself as at least a second round rookie pick. Now he's probably out of the league based on what happened. And like those things definitely happen there, but building up as many assets as you can in your rookie draft, understanding where those tiers are. I love the idea of building out a tier base that Leo's talked about. I've never done it before. I mean, I've done the first round in my head, like this guy's going to do here, but really seeing how that draft board plays out is important, I think. And then you could do it on a spreadsheet and just put them in there. And then you have that forever. Now, you know, kind of generally speaking, how your league will draft based on that. And you could try to like test it out. And I think that's really good to understand kind of where those tiers are too. And you could use the tools that we did. We did the first episode. We talked about like Dynasty Daddy and other stuff and see what they're looking for too, to kind of help you with that framework there. All right. Anything else on rookie prep before we start answering some questions? If you have some questions, you could drop them in the comments as you go there. But anything else in the rookie draft stuff?
No, I think the only thing I would add is just once the rookie draft is done, you know, you've prepped for it, you've done it, you've gone through it, then it's still vital that you pay attention to what's going on, right? Yeah. Because you want to take advantage of any variance window that is created during the summer, whether it's hysteria over a particular player or, I mean, let's face it, we swing and miss all the time. And, you know, I actually said this today on Twitter is that, you know, failure is only it only becomes a failure when you let it linger, when you let it just, you know, sit in its failure. That's it. But it's really, if you pivot quick enough or you move quick enough, it's just a miss and it's a learning experience. So, you know, sometimes whether it's sunken cost, what, you know, whether it's just, you don't want to admit, maybe you missed on an eval. I mean, I did it. I was guilty of it. I liked Laquon Treadwell a lot. I thought he was going to come around and he was going to, even though there was a lot of noise about the fact that he couldn't separate, that he was, you know, that he wasn't really going to be N'Keal Harry, another one. I didn't buy in quite so much, but some folks did. So there's always one or two wide receivers that, you know, everybody's in on, they go early. And the bottom line is they just never really materialize. So pay attention to, you know, just because your draft's done, I guess this is where I'm going, right? Just because your draft's done and you've got those assets now locked up on your roster, be ready to move right away and pay attention to what is being said early on in training camp.
Yeah. You absolutely have to. And it's important just to keep moving, like just keep being active as possible matters. So if you're not in a ton of leagues, it's easier. But it's one of those things where you have to be active, especially in rookie draft prep there. All right. We want to get a listener questions. Cause we had a few that, you know, asked me some things. I am going to talk about Taxi Squad. But if you have some questions, you know, just drop them in the chat. We'll get to them. I see some trade questions. I'll put this up just, I've not said anything about Devonta Chan this episode. So sorry, my guy. All right. So I did have a taxi squad question. So what they asked is like, how do you use a taxi squad to your advantage? Now, if you don't know what a taxi squad is, I did write an article for Football Guys kind of laying it out. Essentially, it's just a specific number of players you can place on your roster. It's basically IR for non-injured players. And usually what managers do or leagues, it's first and second year players. So it's like a minor league system. You stash them. Now, most taxi squads, you know, if you move a guy out, you can't move him back in. So in context of this episode, one way to use a taxi squad is a productive struggle. Keep your best rookies on a taxi squad. So like, if we're going to keep a theme, because I'm trying to keep a theme here, one way to use it to your advantage, if you know you're going to go into a league and they have a taxi squad, it's already in the bylaws and you know that, if your productive struggle just became a whole lot easier, because what you're going to be able to do is you could still, like, you could draft Bijan Robinson last year and stash him. If you wanted to, you could draft some of these, you know, these rookies or even second year guys. So if they allow you to keep second year players and you're drafting, think of the guys that you could put on there. CJ Stroud, if you wanted to. There's so many different ways that you can utilize the taxi squad that people don't think about. Like, you can put any second year guys on a taxi squad. There are so many good rookies this last year, the rookies, Puka Nacua, these other guys that you could just put on your taxi squad. And it's within the league rules. No one can get mad if it's within the league rules and the bylaws. That is how you can build up a monster. So that's one way that you can use a taxi squad. Other ways, I really enjoy this rule where some use it like a practice squad where people can steal players that you don't want to, you can lock two in. And if they take a player like Michael Mayer, who you draft in the second, they have to give you a first. So you have to give a pick higher than what they used on them. That's a lot of fun. But in terms of like taxi squad advantages, using that second year player, I think, is a lot of unused strategy out there. And I think it can be really beneficial in startups.
Yeah. So you're the expert on taxi squads between the two of us, because the only league I ever played in that had a taxi squad was also a Devi league. And yeah. So we just generally used the taxi squads for whoever was still in college, that we didn't have to promote them right away. We still had a window, you know, where even if they were rookies in the NFL, they could stay on the taxi squad. But that's pretty much what we used it for. I love, so listening to it as a fan here, trying to learn more about it, I, even with all my years of experience in Dynasty, I think that's an awesome piece of advice, right? If your league yeah. allows you with a taxi squad to keep productive players on that taxi squad, what better way to ensure that you're going to end up with a high draft pick, because most of your points being scored by that play, you know, all the points by that player or the position, you know, if you put a quarterback, CJ Stroud, on that taxi squad, those points aren't counting to your end, you know, season end. Yeah. So even if you're in a league that a lot of them use, you know, potential points or, you know, total points, whatever that looks like, to decide a draft order as opposed to head to head. And most of the leagues that I was in, they would use potential points. So yeah. even if you, you know, try to not submit your best starting lineup, the points that you could have scored, the ones that were on your bench, could still count towards your draft slot. So it kind of took into account overall roster strength. So this is a great way to mm-hmm. take a player that's going to produce on a weekly basis and not have them count to whatever that draft pick is, because in a productive struggle, you want to make sure you have a high draft pick coming out of the conclusion of that first year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to do it. Like, for example, I had a productive struggle team this last year. I had Devonta Chan. And Jay-Z made me laugh that I would done talk about him, but I did have him on there and I wasn't going to play him. I kept him on my taxi squad. And now that league, I have the 102 and I want Marvin Harrison Jr. because I built it to where I have my quarterbacks. Now I get Marvin Harrison Jr. and I'm going to plug these other guys in there. So that's the one way you can do it there. The other thing I would say about taxi, like, it just depends on like what the league rules are. Some allow you to move in and out. So if that happens, if you're allowed to move players in and out, that just becomes like the waiver wire fodder. So you can kind of move guys in and out and really attack the waiver wire with young running backs. The other example I'd give you in taxis, if you can move them in and out, that's a stash area for running backs, because you could just kind of play like the first and second year guys that might pop off, right? Or might be, you know, those guys that we talk about, that like Keaton Mitchell would be an example this year, or those guys that you could have got last year and you can move them. That's how I would utilize the taxi squad. But probably the best advantage is what I said in terms of like, hey, you can use it for your productive struggle. Just put them on there and go.
So let me ask you this, since you've got, you know, more experience with this, is, are there ever league rules that, because in thinking through this, if I was starting a league and I was trying to build a set of bylaws mm-hmm. that, you know, kind of prevented something like, so that a taxi squad to have the availability to utilize it, but not to burn a entire rookie season of someone like Puka or CJ Stroud. Are there ever rules that if a player starts to average over a certain point total, like over 10 double digit points in a season, they have to be moved off taxi squad? Or is that something that really doesn't ever come into play?
I've never seen it. So I've never seen that. I guess you could, if you wanted to, like, I don't know, integrity, but I think that sometimes it gets a little, you'd have to say like points per game, but then what is the game threshold, right? Is it six? Is it eight? I think they're just like, I think it's tough with that. And generally speaking, most leagues, it's just, hey, first and second year guys, you can put them on the taxi squad. So now some leagues will do this. The first year of the league, you can only put rookies on there. You can't put second year guys. And then moving forward, you can put second year guys. So that's one of those like little areas. So if that's the case, you could still put your high end rookies. And then here's the other thing too. So if you're a startup and they have the picks included, maybe not the players, and you're just drafting picks, you can really, like, let's say you had 4 or 5 first round picks, you really went heavy there in your startup draft, you could put all those guys on the taxi anyway. So like you could get all of those really like Neighbors and Harrison and all these guys if you go really young, heavy on that productive build. So there's still ways to utilize it if they implemented those rules. All right, let's get into some questions. So we have a bunch of people watching. We appreciate you guys. Drop any questions you have. Trade questions. If you have theory questions, those are always great too. If you have just like, hey, what do I do here? What does my roster look like? We'll definitely answer some of these questions as we wrap up the show. We have a question here from Matt. Appreciate you hanging on here. I know you asked this a little earlier. DK and Deshaun Watson. So, DK Metcalf and Deshaun. For 104. So it's a 12-team super flex start 9, no premium for tight ends. So he has Hurts, Kyler, Pickett, Hooker, Puka, London. He has Marvin Harrison Jr., J-Mo, and Wicks here. Hurts and Kyler are two elite assets for fantasy. I think from a rushing standpoint, you're excited about those guys. Having Puka, London, and Marvin Harrison Jr. is a very, very solid base here. I don't mind this deal actually for the 104. I think it's pretty even because Watson and DK are kind of depreciating assets. Kind of DK is on that borderline where I think points per game, he's okay. But there are games where he definitely falls off. I love him in Grubb's offense though. That's the thing. I really love their new offensive coordinator. 104. If it's Neighbors, I would love that. If I knew I was getting Neighbors, I'd be all over this deal. What concerns me, though, if it's May, Daniels, or Bowers without premium, I think you might lose that deal. But if I knew this was Neighbors, I would definitely take the deal.
That's the question that I had right out of the gate is can you wait? Can you, does it have to be done today? Can you wait till 1-4, is on the clock to make that deal? Or closer to it when you might have a better idea who's going to go, 1-3. I agree with you. If it's Neighbors, I'm in. I'm doing it. If it's not, I think I would still do it simply to be able to be, I talk about it a lot, being trade active at draft time. And if you already have the 1-2 and then you add the 1-4, yeah. I think just to be able to have that, because you may be able to flip the 1-4 at draft time for more than what you're giving up for today. So I think, if I can wait, I wait a little bit. And if I can't, then I go ahead and I pull the trigger and take the 1-4.
I think that's a good point. I mean, when you're thinking of like the 104, at draft time, definitely better than Deshaun and probably DK. Yeah. Because those guys, when you're looking at what their ADP is right now, 100% whoever you get at 104 is probably equal or not better than their ADP just based on a value perspective. And maybe at that time, the quarterback situation kind of plays itself out and you sit there and Neighbors goes at 103, but someone might want Drake May or wants Jaden Daniels because they absolutely love what they've been able to do, the combine, the hype and all that kind of stuff. And that's where you can extract it. So that's a good point too. I do think the 104 gives you more leverage in the league, which is what we always talk about here. All right, Adam, appreciate you dropping in. 12 team super flex. So you start 9, half PPR, no tight end premium. So he has the 101 through the 104 and then the 108 and the 110 to 112 and 6 seconds. So this man is moving. He's got the assets and the capital. QBs are Dak and Kirk. Not bad. Wide receivers, Chase, Olave, Ayuk, and Amari. Okay. Who are you taking with the top 4 picks? So for me, I'm taking the two wide receivers. I'll take Marvin Harrison Jr. and I'm taking Neighbors. That's kind of the way I would look at there. As far as, you know, quarterback, I would take Caleb. Those are the three guys that I would take there. I think it really depends on that fourth pick. If it's not tight end premium, depending on who your tight ends are, I love Bowers there. But I would actually look at that 104 as a trade asset. I think that is the, that is what I would look at the 104 as. You probably could get a pretty good player at that 104. And if you're ready to go competing, depending on how your roster is here, I think there's some wiggle room here for like an elite guy. Like I know CMC is going for like 104 to 107 in that range. If you don't want to give up the 104 for CMC, you might be able to use the 108, maybe another first round, one of those late picks for him, if you're ready to push all in and go for it. But I think 104, I would definitely trade. I don't necessarily think I would make a pick there unless your heart is set on like Bowers.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect advice. I definitely go the route you said with 101 through 103.
Yeah.
I mean, everything I've seen on Kirk looks like he's, you know, pretty healthy and, yeah, and it, the rehab is going really well. So I have a lot of confidence there. And there's a lot of other assets to package here. So it doesn't necessarily just have to be the 1-4. You could actually put the 1-4 and 1-8 together, or you could, you know, put the 1-4 and 1-10 together, and, or one of your 2000 second round picks that you have acquired already. You can build a pretty nice package that, depending on this league, you might be able to bring back, you know, quite a haul by putting two first rounders together. Maybe you can potentially stockpile 25 picks. Right. 2025 picks. If, you know, there's, you've got a particular manager in the league that, you know, has acquired a few of them, maybe you can get two of them back for three this year. You know, keep, I always talk about keeping the positive draft momentum going. And I don't like to drop all of my draft picks into one class simply because then they're exhausted, right? Then you only get necessarily what you have or what you can acquire in the next 12 months. I would rather push some of them forward just to have that in hand and keep that positive momentum going. But if I keep it, then even in a non tight end premium, I'm probably leaning Bowers or one of the other two wide receivers. I don't necessarily know if I'm going quarterback or not. I mean, I don't, you know, the Franklin and so one of those two maybe, but I you know, right now I think even in a non-tight end premium I like Bowers.
I would say that go get Garrett Wilson. That would be my, maybe my guy. I feel like he's in that weird tier of, like, you know, between Puka, AJ Brown, Olave, kind of in that range. Like, if you can maybe pivot the 104 for a guy like that, have Chase, Wilson, Marvin Harrison Jr., Neighbors, Olave. I mean, that is nasty. Like, that's a nasty wide receiver room, and you can really kind of pivot off of there. All right. Well, hold on. So, Timothy, does an Achilles affect throw power? I don't think so, but I am not a doctor. But from what I looked up right now while Leo was talking, it seems like more of his torso. And I do know Adam, you know, a couple of different guys from Football Guys, Adam, and I can't, Hutchinson, I believe is his last name. I can't believe I'm messing that up. And then even Jeff Mueller, someone does injury analysis. I don't think they're concerned with Kirk Cousins. So I'm not going to be concerned. So if those guys who I think are smarter than me in terms of that and do this for a living, they're not concerned with them, then I'm not concerned with them.
Yeah. The only thing that and again, I'm not a doctor either. The only thing I worry about is he wasn't extremely mobile to begin with. So, you know, I don't know what that, you know, his pocket presence is going to look like. And I don't think we'll know that until he actually gets back on the field. Everything has looked really good so far. Yeah. So, I mean, that's all you can really, you know, take. But I would, if that's something, that's a really good question and not something that, you know, I really know that much about. So I think once we get done here, I'll reach out to a few folks and see if I can get a answer on their thoughts regarding throwing motion and how it could impact, you know, body torque.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. I think that is something to kind of think about too, when you think of Cousins. All right, Philip, appreciate it. Lost the ship. He has no PPR, 12 team super flex, start nine. So he has Kyler Fields and Bryce. Okay. So I like that. CMC, JT, Chase, Waddle, Olave, Puka, Cooper, McBride, running back and QB get valued high. So he owns the 103. Get Marvin Harrison Jr. if it falls because of format. 102, 104, don't trade. So I don't know. So the idea is, you know, what should be his next move here? So if it's not PPR, yeah. So if Marvin Harris Jr. Falls, yeah, you draft him. If not, this is super flex. So the way I look at it, you're still looking at Neighbors more than likely. I know it's not PPR there, but I would probably lean Neighbors, I think, in this area.
Yeah, the non-PPR piece is, you know, I mean, sometimes my brain just can't even, you know, rationalize the impact to production without PPR. But I do think that Harrison Jr. is the pick regardless. The only other, being super flex, the only other thing that you could potentially do is look to, you know, acquire a quarterback to trade. But I mean, I think I would go, Marvin Harrison there, and there's really no other option, PPR, non PPR.
Yeah. Yeah. If he falls there, that's the case. I don't plan on a lot of no PPR. So that's the tough part. At least give me a half. 12 team superflex, Kevin, Waddle, your firstborn. You can have my middle child. I love my firstborn. She's sweet. My middle child is mean to me. So you can have her. I'll take Waddle in that. Just don't tell her I said that. Then, you know, yes, this isn't so much a question. He was just kind of telling us what he did. 12 team superflex PPR, 1.5 tight end premium, start you 10. He traded the 103 and a 25 first plus Tua plus Deontay for Lamar Puka, in a second. So now he has Kyler Lamar. He still has Amon-Ra, Tyreek Puka. Yeah, I mean, that's a good deal. I think, you know, when you're looking at it, that 25 first is late, you know, in terms of that, probably it's a good time to maybe move off of Tua for Lamar. I don't mind that at all. I think that you definitely want out on that deal with Puka there too. And that's a good value to try to push in and go for it.
Yeah. The only way that deal ends up even really being close is if 1-3 ends up being Harrison Jr. And he is the generational talent that, you know, puts up monster numbers. But the way things stand right now, it's a deal I would make 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah, 100%. All right. Well, hey, if you guys got some other questions, you can drop them. We'll answer them in the next couple minutes. But if not, what we did in this episode, we recap kind of how to do a productive struggle. We talked about rookie draft prep. You know, how do you kind of, you know, build up those things, the tiers base. That was pretty good there. We try to give you some tips for the taxi squads and all those other questions. And if you have questions, you can always DM both of us. You know, if you say, hey, you know, we'd love for you to chat about this on the show. We'll be coming back in a couple weeks. We'll be talking about post combine stuff, probably getting a little bit of rookie stuff as the offseason goes. March and April, you start seeing a lot of activity in your league. So this is the time to really start calculating what you need on your roster. Where are you losing there? And where's the value at? Any final thoughts before we get out of here, Leo?
No, it was a good show. I enjoyed talking about the productive struggle. I mean, that's always challenging, especially every year. It gets harder and harder to execute. And I'm impressed with some of the folks that are still pulling it off in 2024 and doing it well. So that was a lot of fun. And, you know, draft prep and how to evaluate and how to tier out and look at your league mates is always interesting. I think, you know, we'll probably revisit it again, have a conversation about it as we get closer to the NFL draft and what that looks like. And just pay attention, folks. Just, you know, make sure you're watching what your league mates are talking about and what they're posting about, and stay active and stay on top of the news. And that's half the battle.
So I do want to get to this before we get out of here. You know, Sean, he always pops on. I appreciate you, man. It says, when do you consolidate versus add more depth? So you should have been consolidating this whole time. So from as soon as the season's over to, you know, really, honestly, you want to consolidate. I consolidate all the way through the draft, rookie draft. Like, I'm consolidating, getting rid of those guys that, you know, third, second round guys. For example, I traded Rashad Bateman for a third, early third, because I was just done. Like, when you're looking at my roster, he's my wide receiver 7. There's certain guys that you need to get off of a little earlier. I'm okay if he has some games next year. So for me, I'm consolidating early, and then I will add depth through certain positions I deem needed, that I need to have some depth at after my rookie drafts, and I'll target those usually on the waiver wire.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. To me, it's always about the churn. It's just, it never ends. Consolidate. Yeah. So if you have a 28 person player roster and you've consolidated to what you think is a 24 player core, then you add more depth through those last four spots and constantly churn, then turn that 28 into 24 and then turn the next 28 into 24. So it's, you're right about the timing. When you should be adding depth and in season. But for me, it's constant. Just make sure, because every time you consolidate, you freed up more space. So then you're looking to add to it, and then you're looking to consolidate again. So constant churn.
Constant churn. That's kind of the deal there. All right. Well, we appreciate you guys. We'll get you guys in a couple of weeks. Until then, we'll see you guys later.